Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon. Welcome to Blood Magic, the podcast. This is podcast episode number 10, milestone number 10. Stay all the way to the end for a sneak peek to the untitled sequel to Blood Magic. Hours after dusk, Devlin, Chow, Duncan, and I were boarding a small jet in a private airstrip outside of Richmond. They had far too much firepower to fly commercial. They each had two carry-ons, one for personal effects, the second for weapons. In addition to that, Devlin and Chow each brought ornate antique sword cases. I'd even negotiated a stop at the mall for more appropriate clothes. I was tired of looking like a tourist fresh from Washington, D.C. The interior of the plane was sleek and modern. The colors were a contrast of black and gold with rich mahogany trims. The black leather seats were wide and accommodating with the television monitor fixed overhead. We stowed our luggage and chose our seats. A steward even appeared to get us drinks and make sure we had what we needed before the jet took off. I took the window and Devlin sat next to me. Duncan and Chow spread themselves out around the cabin. The pilot Jack came out to mingle with us for a few minutes. He was a fit 50-something man with salt and pepper hair. He told us a story about his latest adventure to Panama involving a secret government agency he couldn't reveal and their quest to bust an illicit drug smuggling ring. The men shared a few good-natured laughs. Then he was back in the cockpit firing up the engines and we were taxiing down the runway. I watched us pass the bright lights of the rural airport as we began our trek. Then we were picking up speed and lifting into the night air. Devlin informed me that it was a long ride to India and I should get comfortable. I decided to pull out my mother's journal and read another entry. June 15th. It had been some time before I saw the nightly visitor again. Every night that I had guard duty, I insist on the same post. Last night was no different. It was deep in the night. I had nothing but a cup of coffee to keep me awake when I noticed that it was suddenly quiet. Too quiet. Nothing was stirring in the jungle. No animals, no insects, nothing. I was instantly alert, scanning the underbrush and path for a cause. I had a strange sense of foreboding. That's when I heard movement on the path. I lighted a lantern and held it out in front of me and decided to investigate. This time I had a weapon. A small handgun tucked into the waistband of my pants. Now all the guards were armed, and people continued to disappear sporadically. The gun made me braver than I should have been. I walked several yards and only had the lantern as my light when I heard a chuckle behind me. I spun around with the gun and out ready to fire. It was the tall figure I'd seen so many nights ago. He was hooded and I couldn't see his face. He informed me that he knew I was a long way from home, and that he didn't approve of my mission. He had an old-world way of speaking and was very formal. He confessed to sabotaging the trip and being our thief. He claimed he did it because he felt my mission would only bring more intruders. Eventually, I found myself lowering the gun and slowly moving closer to him. I knew our time would run out, and I would have to check in with the other guards. He didn't comment on my progress and began talking about the beauty of the Congolese jungle and the special qualities of the pox flower. Many things I'd already known. Just as the circle of light from my lantern reached his neck and was about to light his face, he stopped me. He informed me that my curiosity was as dangerous as it was appealing. Before I knew what happened, he advanced on me and grabbed me by the shoulders. I caught a glimpse of a golden, handsome face. Then he opened his mouth to reveal monstrous, sharp canine teeth. I screamed and fell into a faint. "So when are we going to talk about this kiss?" Devlin's quiet question took me off guard. I looked around the cabin and saw the others were engrossed in their own distractions. Chow had on headphones and was listening to his iPod. Duncan was listening to a movie playing overhead. I felt my face get hot, then I mumbled, "It was just a kiss, no big deal." Devlin raised a sable eyebrow at that reply and fought not to smile. "Actually," I began a little firmer, "I wouldn't bring it up if I were you. I think you took advantage of me at a weak moment." He laughed at that. "I was taking advantage of you, so you didn't kiss me back." "No, I did not. I tried to lie to both of us. I rummaged around in the seat pocket in front of me to find my own headphones and listen to the movie. The flight to India was long but comfortable. We landed well into the night the next day at a rural airstrip not far outside of Bombay. We loaded our bags into a jeep at the exit. Our guide and driver, Tim, were going to take us directly to the monastery in Ophelia. The night was warm and humid. As we drove, I admired the lush vegetation from the passenger side of the vehicle. I could appreciate that my evolving senses allowed me to recognize colors, sounds, and scents that would have gone unnoticed just a few days ago. I also realized that I was losing track of time. I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen a bright sunny morning. I noticed that Tim had a long rifle across the dashboard of the jeep. "You came prepared," I said to him, gesturing with my left hand. "Yes, there are tigers and other predators looking about," he replied in accented English. We continued our travel along the rough road. The way was well worn with bumps and ruts and grooves made by carts pulled by beasts. Time passed and the vegetation grew less dense in favor of shorter grass. We also began traveling at an incline. The road became smoother until it was a cobbled path. We came to a steep hill that led us up over a ridge. At the crest of the ridge, I could see the valley below and the monastery. It was beautiful. The temple was made of gold domes and cream columns. Passing directly in front of it was a river that traveled east. About a mile later, we passed the main gates and were swallowed up by the architectural beauty. Monks with bald heads and swaddled in vibrant orange robes closed gates behind us. Inside, there were smaller structures, homes that led to the temple. We stopped at one of those structures and got out. Two more monks greeted us. Introductions were made, and I was led to my quarters while the men were led to theirs. My room was modest but very clean and welcoming. There was even a tray of food waiting with healthy vegetarian selections and drink. I dropped my bag by the bed and Sanjay took his lead. My next stop was the restroom where I washed up and changed into fresh clothes. I settled on khaki pants and a lemon yellow tank top. On the bed, I eyed the meal. I relished the time alone. I realized that I had not been this alone since the whole ordeal began. I had a door and I could lock it. No one would be able to bother me. I looked forward to getting some answers and enjoying a good night's sleep. I had just finished my meal when Sanjay knocked on the door. He informed me that Ophelia was ready to see us. I got up to follow him out and at the last minute grabbed my gun and tucked it safely in the waistband of my pants. Outside, we gathered loosely in the square. I saw that the men had also decided to come prepared for anything. I wondered how a pox woman with such gifts could live with so little protection in a world of vampires. I didn't know it at the time, but I would soon have the answer to that question. Another monk, Klaus, led us through the rest of the homes and up the monument-like stairs into the temple. Inside, the walls were lined with rows of dedicated monks. They all wore the same garb, but they were a rainbow of skin tones and ethnicities. Ophelia sat in the middle at the top of four stone steps on a raised dais. Her pure white hair was loosely coiled on top of her head, and she was also simply robed. Her skin held a healthy bronze glow, and she looked down over with alert cocoa eyes. We were led to the base of the steps. "Welcome, my children. I am happy to see you hearty and well," she said in a voice that held a husky timbre. Devlin spoke up first. "Thank you for receiving us. We've come to seek your wisdom and guidance." He introduced us all, finishing with me. "Selena, it is wonderful news that you've been found," she shared. "I must say I'd rather be found than murdered at the hands of Marcus. So what are your questions for me? I need to know if the changes from the blood are permanent. What changes have happened so far?" "My eyes. They used to look almost black, and now I have a ring of amber around them." "Yes, that is permanent. What else will change?" "You're becoming who you are meant to be, Selena. The blood is helping the process, but eventually you won't need it." "You mean I'll have visions without the blood?" "Yes." "How is it that I'm the one?" "There are many candidates, but at least one of your parents had to be of the Paw people." "My mother was a researcher, so I assume she converted?" "Yes." "And what of my father?" "He is unknown." "Unknown?" "Yes." "Then there's a good chance she didn't meet him among the Pox clan." "More than likely she did not. I have her journal, the one that Marcus gave me." "Then perhaps you will find the answer to that particular question in the journal." "Where is my mother now?" "She's in Rome, continuing her scientific work." Knowing that she was still alive brought a sense of relief. How exactly am I supposed to kill Marcus? Didn't Devlin tell you? Take out the heart or take off the head? Yes, any one of the guardians can do that. Other than the visions telling me where he is, what else can I do? It will not be any of the guardians who kill Marcus. It will have to be you. He's stronger than me, in some ways, but not others. There will come a moment where his life will be in your hands. You will have to decide to be the one to end him. What happens if I fail? Then you die, and so will the rest of us. We need you, Selena. End this monster. Will I be able to go back to my life if I succeed? I think you already know the answer to that, she said, and I realized I did. There was the sound of an explosion outside the temple. 3 dozen or so assorted men rushed into the temple behind us, armed with a cache of swords and knives. One thing they all had in common was the ghostly pallor of death. Vampires! Devlin yelled, and the fighting began. The monks lining the walls that I thought were there for ceremonial purposes sprang into action with thick wooden staffs that they wielded like fierce warriors. They were skilled at blocking the blades and staking the vampires at vulnerable moments. 1/4 of them surrounded the dais and protected Ophelia. The guardians spread out and used their own firepower to decapitate and maim others. I had my gun out and was using my unnaturally good aim to nail vampires through the heart. Then Devlin grabbed me and dragged me behind a column along the wall. Stay behind me, he yelled over the snarls and melee of the fight. He had fought off 4 vampires before a particularly nasty one seemed impervious to his bullets. They tussled around until they both fell to the ground and continued to fight for dominance. The vampire was on top, and Devlin was out of bullets, reaching for his knife. The monster reared his head back to strike when I emptied my gun into the back of his head. His brains and blood blew out from his forehead, splattering Devlin. Then he went limp. Devlin threw him to the ground like useless trash and gave me one of his ferocious smiles as he got to his feet. There was another explosion. This one was inside the temple. The force shook the rafters, and parts of the structure crumbled to the ground. I heard a shrill scream and came out from behind the column in time to see Ophelia surrounded by vampires and being dragged out of a hole in the wall behind her dais. Dead and ravaged monks littered the steps like broken dolls. Devlin grabbed my hand, and we raced up the steps after Ophelia. The guardians and monks that were left followed right behind us. We leapt over the debris and the blown opening and stepped through. Outside, Ophelia was being dumped into a waiting van that sped away from the temple through the grass and onto a path that led into the untamed jungle. Sanjay came abreast of us. He was bloodied and bruised. He spoke up through a swelling split lip. This is a travesty. Where does that path lead? Devlin asked, breathing heavily. It leads to the Emerald Mountain. We're going after them, I said as more of a statement than a question. Yes, we are, Devlin confirmed. With a single focus, Devlin assembled the guardians, and Klaus assembled the monks that were really Ophelia's warrior guards. Then together they started talking strategy. The path to the Emerald Mountains could be driven up to the last mile. Then we'd have to hike it on foot. Once at the base of the mountain, there were winding caverns that led to a ceremonial pool, where training warriors lived in solitude until ascension, the last step of their rigorous training. The fact that they didn't kill Ophelia on the spot meant that they had planned to keep her alive for a purpose. What the purpose was, and how long she'd be useful to them, was unknown. We had to act fast. In no time, we assembled a caravan of jeeps and vans. 2 vans of monks were up front, we were in the middle, and then 2 jeeps of monks were behind us. We were all well-armed as we could be. Devlin even lent me his sword and reminded me of my lessons from days ago. I had it strapped to my back and the hilt was against my right shoulder for easy access. We cleared the valley at a breakneck pace and entered the humid confines of the jungle. I was tense and on alert, scanning the brush that rolled by us in a blur. The sight of the temple had been bloody. Monks and vampires alike lay in various scenes of death. Monks had had their necks ripped out or twisted at contorted angles. The vampires were disintegrating heaps of gray ash. The vampire numbers were down, but so were ours. We were on a rescue mission where more of us would surely die. We traveled along the winding path in silence. I looked around the jungle that had been so beautiful, but now it was menacing and harbored the unknown. We drove for a time, then our convoy suddenly stopped. I couldn't see what delayed us, but then there was a fireball of explosion up ahead. The first van was gone and all the warriors inside. We continued around the inferno of burning metal and flesh. The tension rose in the jeep. We were expected, and traps had been laid. There was only one way to Emerald Mountain, and one way out. The vehicles kept in touch with two-way radios. We drove for a time, then we heard yelling and screaming over the radio. The last jeep in our caravan had fallen into a pit. It was a good 15-foot drop. Some of the men were injured, while others were fine. We stopped to quickly go back for them. Rope was sent down, and they were pulled up one by one. The survivors were quickly divided among the vehicles left. Then we continued on our way. Before we could wonder about the next booby trap, the path ended. We had reached the point where we'd have to hike a mile to the mountain's opening. The injured were left behind with plenty of ammunition to defend themselves. They would be useless to us in the battle to come. We meandered on foot through the underbrush, stepping over complicated root systems from ancient trees until the soil gave way to a firmer, rockier mixture. Emerald Mountain loomed above us through the thinning trees until we were right upon it. The opening to the caverns yawned, black and hungry. Then we filed in one by one. Devlin stayed close to me. I realized I was the most inexperienced fighter in the group and hope I didn't become a liability. We wound our way through the stone tunnels in the moist darkness with our torches as beacons of light. It was utterly silent. Deeper and deeper we traveled, and then the ground began to slope downward. The quietness began to be filled with sounds of water. At first it was drips that graduated into trickling, then the steady rush of a stream. We were almost to the pool. It suddenly seemed too easy, this trek through the mountain. There were no guards, no traps, nothing to slow us down. I could see light up ahead, and we moved closer to the source of the water. Then we filed out of the tunnel into an opening full of moonlight from a natural skylight up above. A wide stream cut its way through the middle of the ceremonial chamber. It was like a catacomb of sorts with openings from other tunnels lining the walls. We fanned out in a semicircle. On the other side of the stream, on its sandy banks, was Ophelia. She was bound and gagged and blindfolded. Half the monks, along with Devlin and Chow, cautiously walked across the sand and shallow stream. Devlin had left me with a warning to be on guard while they retrieved Ophelia. They reached her and freed her from her binds. She had a moment to tell them that we shouldn't have come before vampires appeared at every opening to the lair. To make matters worse, several more descended from the natural skylight, effectively dividing the team in half. Weapons were drawn, guns, knives, and swords. Body parts began to hit the ground as the vampires swarmed us. I heard growling behind me, drew the sword, and turned to slice the hungry monster behind me from his shoulder down to his waist. I got the heart on the way because he fell dead at my feet with a look of surprise on his face. I had no time to recover before a vice-like grip pulled me by my hair from my left side. I needed a shorter blade for the close proximity and pulled a dirk from the waistband of my pants and caught the vampire in the stomach. He relaxed his grip, which gave me time to jump back and get a full swing, decapitating him. His head rolled to the ground, and his body slumped over. There were shouts and yells all around me as people and vampires fought for their lives. Then two vampires tried to team up on me. They approached side by side with their fangs out and glistening. I held the sword behind me. They smiled at me, thinking I was too afraid to move. Then I tried a trick that Devlin had taught me. I spun around and swung the sharp sword out. It split them both in half like butter. They fell to the ground like broken toys. I finished the task by taking their heads. Next thing I knew, I was tackled from behind and fell to the ground with the wind knocked out of me. The sword lay out of reach. The monster on my back wrenched me around until we were face to face. He pinned my arm so I couldn't reach any of my weapons. Then he reared his head back like a viper, ready to rip my throat. I opened my mouth to scream and his head was gone by Tim's blade, and I was drowning in the flood of the vampire's blood. It flowed down my throat, cold as ice, and it was a shock to my system. My limbs were infused with an inhuman strength, and my senses, already heightened, reached an almost frenzied state. I tossed the headless vampire away from me and got up to make my way across the stream to Devlin and Ophelia. The vampires were like flies to be swatted. Some I used my sword, while others I simply grabbed their heads and twisted them off like ripe tomatoes. I could feel that their numbers were dwindling, but our team had also suffered some loss. As I crossed the stream, I saw Devlin and Chow with three other monks fighting off vampires and forming a protective circle with Athelia in the middle. The odds were grim. There were at least five vampires for each fighter. There was no way to get them all out without losing someone. In a moment of desperation, I grabbed one of the vampires lurching towards them. I twisted him around and grabbed him by his head, ready to wrench it off. He looked deep into my eyes and whimpered, "You're the one." I carelessly thought that I wished the vampires would just leave. His body froze. His eyes flashed gold. Before I could twist his head off, he whispered, "Yes, I will leave." I released him, and he turned to do just that. I looked around and saw that all the vampires had frozen in their tracks and began to walk away from us. They walked away from the fight. They left the catacomb of tunnels through which they had come. The fight was over, and I had discovered that I had a new power. Thank you for listening to the milestone episode number 10 of Blood and Magic, the podcast. Now here's a sneak peek to the untitled sequel to Blood and Magic, the novel. A loud, persistent knocking woke me from my sleep. I was comfortable, wrapped in a sheet on my bed. I rolled over to see my clock. It was almost an hour before dawn. I wanted to go back to sleep. I thought it might be Devlin back to finish what he started earlier in the evening. I got out of bed and put on my yellow bathrobe over my Mickey Mouse sleep shirt. I didn't bother with slippers. Octavia stood up from her checkered blanket at the foot of the bed and meowed at me. "Yeah, girl, I know. It's early. Let's hope this is good news," I mumbled. I made my way from the bedroom to the front door, flipping on the lights as I went. I looked out the peephole and I was shocked to see that it was Adrian. I hadn't seen him in weeks, and he'd never been to my home. I swept off all the locks and opened the door. Adrian stood there under the awning, fresh from a fight. His faded jeans were torn and revealed bloody gashes on his legs. His moss-green t-shirt was stained with splashes of drying blood. His face was drawn tight. Even his bald head had lacerations. His amber eyes were mostly pupil. His fangs had run out, but he was old enough to almost completely hide them. Most people wouldn't have noticed, but I knew what to look for. "Selena, I need to speak with you. May I come in?" he asked formally. "What is this about, Adrian? Please, not out here. Invite me in." I thought about it for a minute, then I gave the invitation that magically allowed a vampire to enter someone's home. He crossed the threshold, wary and alert. We stood in the foyer. "Is there anything I can get you?" "No, I won't be long." He paused and narrowed his eyes at me. "Why haven't you been going out fighting with the Guardians?" "Oh, not this nonsense again." "Because I don't want to," I said as I crossed my arms underneath my breasts. "You are the one. You are destined to fight evil and keep the balance." "No, I was destined to kill Marcus and keep him from ruling over humans and magical creatures. Now I'm done." "You can't be done. There are other factions rising up. There are other vampires vying to take Marcus's place." "Okay, you can tell the Guardians about that. They live for the fight. It's their way of life." "It's your way of life, too." "No, my way of life is being a fifth grade teacher. Right now I'm on vacation and I want to enjoy it. As a matter of fact, the crime rate is down in the DC metro area, so all seems to be well. I just came from a fight. Another vampire kiss tried to take over my home. We are not the first ones to be hit. Someone is trying to monopolize the area." "Who?" "I don't know who the leader is yet. They are new to the area, but they are vicious." "Vampire politics are not my problem." "Vampire politics? They are attacking the vampires that want to coexist with humans, the ones that do not kill to feed. Would you stand by and watch killers picking off your neighbors, friends, or family?" I wanted to shout to the world that I wanted to be left alone. The desire bubbled up inside me until I tasted bile. "You know what I have to do to join the fight," I seethed. "Yes," he said as he moved closer to me. "It's what you were meant to do. It's not natural. It's vital." His nostrils flared and his golden eyes roved my face. "It changes me. We are all changed by war." "I can't," I said, tightening the belt on my robe. I made a move to walk away from him. His arm shot out like a steel band, blocking my path. "Taste me," Adrian breathed. What? "Do it. Experience the power it gives you. Remember what it's like to have the rush of life fill you to bursting." I backed against the wall. I could smell the wounds that crisscrossed his body. The blood was fresh. and in that moment I knew it would be strong. I briefly closed my eyes, trying to center myself. How can you want that? I do. I'll be in your head. I'll control you. Do it. He brought his hands up and pressed them against the wall on either side of my head, caging me. Adrian, go home. Taste me. Make me leave. I might bind you closer to me. His breath hitched. I don't think I would mind that. Angry and enticed, I reached up and grabbed his left bicep that was still oozing blood. I gave it a squeeze, wanting to hurt him. He grunted and balled his hands into fists. I felt the monster in me peek out with a savage hunger. He was just a vampire after all. I raised my blood-coated hand to my face as I stared into his wary eyes. I slipped my tongue out to trail it across my palm. I realized I'd never tasted Adrian's blood directly, and it was delicious. His blood was rich and savory like spiced meat. Other vampires were a muddy taste, completely unappetizing. I felt the power of his essence infuse me. An electric thrill spread from the center of my body outward to my limbs. I slipped into his mind. He was here to persuade me to join the fight. However, that was not his only motive. He brought his face a hair breadth away from mine. Say it, he breathed. Why do you taste different? He briefly closed his eyes. I don't know. It was truth. I feel you in my head like a pulse, he growled. I know what you want from me. Take it. He was leaving it up to me to close that final distance. My mouth watered. I wanted to strip him of his torn clothes and rove his body. I wanted to drink him down until I was full to bursting. Adrian, go home. It's almost dawn, I whispered. I heard his sharp intake of breath. I had surprised him. He straightened up, stared heatedly at my mouth. Adrian turned and opened the door. He left. I slid to the floor in a heap of live nerve endings and confusion. Thank you for listening. Come back, same time, same place, next week.